Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Cat Bailey. With me today, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, it's finally snowing here today.
Oh, really? It is. It took that long, huh?
It actually took a long time, I guess, because the climate being what it is these days, it does not snow as early as it used to when I was a kid.
Here in California, half the state is being burned up with wildfires, which is terrifying. And
yeah, it's scary.
You seen that video of the burning hellscape of people are looking out on as they're trying to drive to work?
Yeah, I've seen an edit where someone fixed a sign so it says, now entering 2018.
Yeah, no. Oh, my God. Too real.
Way too real.
Yeah, and here in San Francisco, it's supposed to be the rainy season, and it hasn't rained yet.
Oh, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, considering that we only just finally came out of the mega drought. And it's like, yay, all right, back into drought conditions. I'm looking forward to it.
Hooray.
We are actually recording this episode a little earlier in the week than usual, recording it on a Monday, because by the time this episode comes out, I will be in the UK taking care of you folks. Not going to miss a week except for Christmas. We are going to miss Christmas.
Yes, we are.
Or Hanukkah in your case, Nadia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can do both. I used to do both when I was a kid because my mom comes from, like, she's Irish Catholic and she's a convert, so.
But that does not mean we don't have plenty to talk about. Do the grand finale of the Final Fantasy IX report.
Yeah, it's that time.
Yeah, Nadia has officially finished it. So you're going to go into that, and then next week we'll do a wrap-up of the Final Fantasy IX report on top of our best RPGs of 2017.
It's going to be a good time.
It is going to be a good time. Okay, but really quickly, can I talk a little more about Xenoblade Chronicles 2?
Sure. Have you gotten sick of it yet?
It's still okay. Yeah,
okay,
I'm still down with it. I'm in Chapter 3 now.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so since we last chatted, some things that have happened. I have a full party now.
Congratulations.
So I have the meh thing. I can never remember its name.
His name is Tora, and the way you can remember his name is he has tiger stripes.
Tora. Right. The thing with hands for ears.
Yeah, I think that's just a trademark of the series. They're no pawns.
Okay.
So they've been in all the games.
In any case, I got that thing, and then I also got the girl with the tiger.
Yeah.
She's on my team now.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to do the gacha thing and starting to get a whole bunch of blades that I can choose from. But I've been continuing to lean on Pyra because she is so far pretty much the best in terms of just being able to deal out raw damage.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're not wrong, but I will say you will want to develop at least one more good blade before, like, Chapter 7. So, I mean, you don't have to worry about it too much yet, but do have a backup. Just, you know.
So the first blade I got was this healer that's kind of a brawler.
Yeah.
Who is able to just heal me continuously, and he's very useful.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been keeping him as the other blade on my team that I can switch to if needed, if I end up in a problematic spot. But I don't know. I haven't had a ton of reason to do so yet.
Yeah. I honestly will admit that I do not flip blades that often. That's why for a while I bonded the blades with my other party members more frequently because they switch all the time. I never think to switch.
That's what I've been doing, actually. Yeah. So Tora can't bond with blades because Tora has a robot.
Yeah.
A robot girl.
Poppy.
Poppy, who came in. And Poppy is a tank.
Yes.
And I briefly tried to play as Tora and I was like, oh, no, went back to Rex. playing as a tank isn't super fun. I was like, well, maybe I'll just tank damage and then I'll leave the DPS and everything to the computer. But then the computer was constantly switching back and forth, and I was like, maybe this isn't the most efficient thing.
Yeah, no, playing as a tank isn't much fun. Tanks are super important in Xenoblade, but mm-hmm. not much fun to play as.
And then the girl, I don't remember what her name is, but Nia. Okay, Nia and Tora. I remember this now. Nia and her tiger are the healers.
Yes.
And so if she, and I've started bonding blades to her, but the blades that she's been getting are kind of eh. So I'm like, I guess I'll just stick with the tiger. So.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but yeah, I bonded Nia with that. At one point, I can't remember what part you get it in, but there's like a point where you get a certain legendary blade, and for some reason, I can't even remember how I got it. I just found it in my inventory, and I said, okay, I'll give this to Nia. And I gave her this blade. It turned out to be Wolfric, who's this huge, hulking, black hell knight who just wants to be friends with everyone. And he's pretty incredible. He's like a really powerful earth attacker.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's worth having her take that one?
Sure. Can't hurt. She switches between it. Like I said, like, I forget to switch between my blades all the time, but she doesn't, and sometimes that benefits the party because she'll remember, hey, I can switch to this character. He has a really powerful attack. They put the AI puts all the thinking that I don't want to do into the gameplay.
Well, the dynamic is kind of, so every blade has a class type.
Yeah.
As we were just discussing, attacker, healer, and tank.
Yeah.
And so you definitely want to set up your party so that dynamic is in play, because you need a tank and you need a healer, or else you're going to just get rolled.
Yes.
And then you also need DPS to be able to do a lot of damage, because a lot of stuff takes a lot of damage. It's pretty insane. So it feels a little like I'm being railroaded into my current party composition just a smidge. I tried some other blades. I got this blade with a gun. Wasn't impressed by the blade with the gun, because it just wasn't doing all that much damage. And I also got one with a big axe, which was doing some area of attack damage or area of effect damage and stuff, but felt too slow.
Yeah. Well, it would be, has a big axe.
So I was like, okay, well, I'll just stick with Pyra. And I've put a core chip on the brawler blade as well, so that they get a significant increase in attack. And also, because I have them attached to my party, I'm continuously fulfilling objectives on the little affinity thingy.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to do that. So, like I said earlier, certain blades have really weird circumstances that you need to fulfill to level them up, but those aren't, you probably won't encounter those until a little bit later. But yeah, most of the systems take care of themselves in a weird way.
Yeah, I was a little confused by Poppy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the UI for Poppy is really different and strange.
You have to get used to a whole new set of menus, basically.
Yeah, and you can change Poppy's class.
Yep.
But so there's, right now Poppy has the tank mod, but I guess there are other mods as well.
Yeah.
So
make her what you want, basically. She's a very customizable character if you have the time to bother with all that.
Yeah. And I've started putting together the aux cores.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of regular common blade.
Yeah.
Orbs. And I almost feel like it's a waste of time to summon them, because I'm not going to get anything that's especially great.
No, you're right. I summoned, you know what? There does come a point where you've probably come across things like, say, a treasure chest or a draft of air that requires a certain field power that a blade might have. Like, for example, wind mastery, earth mastery. The common blades have that, like the very basics, but they don't have the really super useful stuff. But it's good to have a few around just for that circumstance, just for that purpose. But I would say don't feel bad about selling off some of your common core chips, because you don't need like 35 of them like I currently have.
Yeah, I don't feel like I do. So I haven't really bothered making any more commons. And they all come out as kind of basic robot people.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing.
Yeah, I was hoping for a variety of more interesting designs.
There's actually, have you gotten, like, there's a common beast type as well, which is kind of neat. I like those, but...
No beasts yet. They've all been the robots.
Yeah, see, it might be handy to have a beast or two, because later on, when you open up mercenary missions, some of them call for a beast type. So it's good to have a couple on hand. So I'll summon a couple more.
And I also have I've also received a few rare chips, and I have actually summoned those, but what I got out of that wasn't particularly interesting.
Did you get any, like, weird booby chicks?
Nope, no weird booby chicks yet.
What I do sometimes is I equip something that boosts my luck stat before I summon, and that sometimes helps me get a really good one, but it's not a guarantee.
But I haven't really had any trouble. I've kind of come to grips with the flow of the battle system.
Yeah, I like the flow.
So I have figured out how to do a fair amount of damage using the blade combos. Because what you got to do, I guess, is you initiate a blade combo by doing your kind of special attack.
Yeah.
And at one point, I waited until it was up to 2.
Yeah.
And then I used it. And then I got, and then I combined that with the Earth one. And then somehow I unlocked a super attack from the robot. And I was like, how do I do that again? Do you know how you do that again?
Oh, gosh. It's so funny because if I have it in front of me, I know what I'm doing, but it's like explaining the rules of grammar. Fun fact about me, I failed grammar every single time I took it in school. Like, I'm talking about hard Fs. I just can't explain grammar. But I can write good grammar.
And Nadia is a staff writer at US Gamer. US Gamer.
Yes, I am. But no, I just, it's like that. I know how something works, but I can't tell you how something works. And this is very much one of those cases. Best I can tell is the longer a battle goes on and the longer you hold off on using those special attacks, the more powerful of a punch you can administer, basically.
Okay. So what you're saying is I should wait till 3. And
it never hurts. But you know, you don't have to do that because I think that there is going to get to a point, you might even be at that point now, where battles can take a long time because enemies are damage sponges. And if I usually wait till 2. Before I just initiate an attack. If you're going up against like a really powerful boss or one of those like super monsters, by all means, hold off. But I would not bother too much about, you know, waiting forever. I'm sure someone has some good strategies and they can probably drop some in the comments for you.
They also included a footnote where they were like, oh, by the way, you might want to keep in mind that if you keep spamming the same blade combo, the damage will go down considerably.
I didn't
get
that.
But you don't see anything else that reminds you of that after that point.
I never saw that.
So that's kind of a big deal.
Just a small one, yeah.
I wonder how many people realize that, oh, if you keep using the same blade combo, you're going to do dramatically reduced damage.
Maybe that's... Well, you know what? I don't think we have to worry too much about that because... are they talking about individual blade combos or, like, the chain attacks? I don't know. I don't know which one it is. But if our party members shift the blades for us, then I wouldn't worry too much about using the same attack over and over again.
All right. In any case, I made it into Chapter 3, and now I'm at a point where I'm running through the vast fields... that I remember from Xenoblade Chronicles. It almost feels like a mixture of Xenoblade Chronicles and Xenoblade Chronicles X.
It definitely does. Are you in... I can't remember if that's where you get to the kingdom where you actually get swallowed by a titan and you're inside of it.
I have not reached that point yet.
Because that's just a gorgeous, gorgeous landscape, which is funny because you're inside of a titan. You'll see that pretty soon. But yeah, you would be on like one of the bigger titans in the game. And yeah, it's pretty incredible. That's one thing I've actually noticed going back and forth between Zelda and Xenoblade, because I'm kind of playing both at the same time. Zelda has the more, like, much, much more polished, much easier to control. The map is so much better. Xenoblade's map is terrible. But Xenoblade feels a lot more alive, because you go on to, like, those giant plains, and you see, like, the enemies running around and interacting with each other. I really, really like that aspect of the series.
So, basically, the plot has lost a lot of momentum at this point because it's kind of sent me off on fetch quests.
It'll do that. Yeah, it does that a lot at the beginning, but it picks up again.
Because Tora sent me to... So I was running toward the objective marker.
Uh-huh.
And I eventually made it, and they were like, go and collect all these items so I can build a ship or something.
Yeah, I remember that. I got lost on that quest because I couldn't find where the hell I was going. I just know Tora said, go to the Titan's bum bum. I'm like, oh, okay, I can go to the Titan's ass, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it really starts to pick up after that, so don't worry.
Yeah, it was a little confusing because you run toward the mission marker and you get all of the things that you're supposed to get. And then you're like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
But a new mission marker does not appear.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go into the objectives.
Yes.
And see, oh, I need to go and get some other like wood from this one tree or something.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't tell you how.
Nope. You gotta find it.
So you have to go to collection points. So I just went to collection points until I finally got everything that I needed, and then it'll go, okay, now head back.
Yeah.
And also when you're leaving the point where you do the initial collection, a bird monster that's level 75 is lurking out there.
Oh, I remember that one. What a jerk. Yeah, that thing was.
It will kill you a whole bunch.
Oh yeah. And Rex will be like, it's okay, we can try again. No, we can't. Run.
Yeah. Thankfully, this game is very forgiving in terms of it's very forgiving in terms of getting a game over. It's not one of those games where you'll get thrown back several hours.
No, it's basically like nothing happened. It was like, I think I fell off a cliff and it was like, oh, what was that? I guess we took a wrong step or something like that. One of the funniest moments in the game for me was I was in the aforementioned Titan where you're inside this Titan and there's like cliffs everywhere. And I stepped off a cliff by accident I stepped off a cliff because I figured, okay, I'm going to be lazy and I'm going to land in the deep water and that'll save me a long trip. So I jump off the cliff and morning passes and Rex says, it's a new day, everyone. And then he pancakes on the ground because the water was too shallow. And just the timing of it all is just fantastic. It's a new day and now I'm dead.
So I'm still enjoying Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I find it super chill because it's just a game that I can play without thinking too much.
Exactly.
Despite the fact that it's not really turn-based, it's pretty easy to get into a battle and just go with the flow of the battle system until the battle is over. And I think the hardest thing, believe it or not, is just making sure that you don't aggro like 50 monsters by mistake.
Yeah, I did that yesterday. I was playing and I met a super monster and I said, oh, I could take this thing. And then I swear to God, like 50 monsters piled on me at the same time. But I got through it.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations. You're awesome.
That was actually really satisfying.
Awesome. Yeah, there are points where it's like, well, I'm doing okay. Like, I feel like I can survive this, but this is super annoying.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm finding way too many monsters at once, and this is going to take a while, so buckle up, I guess.
You do know how to, like, separate them from each other, right? Like, if you, you can basically target...
You can taunt them over.
Yeah, and you couldn't do that with the first game, I think, so that's a really handy new feature.
Yeah, and then otherwise, it's just, oh, that is a giant pack of monsters. I better just kind of step around them because I don't want to have to deal with all of this. Oh, too late, crap.
Too late, yeah. Once you get to a higher level, they're just like, yeah, I don't want a piece of you.
All right. Well, I don't know that we're doing an actual Xenoblade Chronicles 2 report, but I'm continuing to play it. And until I get bored with it, I guess I'll just do regular check-ins.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, you'll be on the plane soon, and that's a good time to give it a good go.
Well, that's where I'm going to wrap up Breath of the Wild.
All right.
Yeah, I'm wrapping up Breath of the Wild and maybe Mario Odyssey as well.
Nice. I really do hope that your plane has a plug then, because one thing I learned since going back to Breath of the Wild is it will drain your battery like nothing else.
Yeah, so does a lot of things. And the best thing about being on the plane is that I won't be able to play Fire Emblem Heroes, which has inexplicably started stealing my time again.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to get away. Run away!
Run away from Crom.
All right, we're back here with Nadia. And Nadia, we're going to do the latest Final Fantasy IX report, which is the penultimate Final Fantasy IX report. And, well, you're done with the game.
Yeah, I finished. It was, you know, when I picked up, it was actually quite a bit more than I thought it would be, because I kind of had the impression that the final fight was in the next room, but that wasn't the case. Just to recap, Zidane went through his existential crisis, so he was on his way to confront Garland, and we did. We went up against Garland. That was fun. And then Kuja, of course, says, "Ha ha, you know, thank you for getting rid of the old man for me." And he does, you know what he does? He does the exact same thing as Kefka in Final Fantasy VI, where Kefka kicks Emperor Geschtal off the island. He does the same thing to Garland, like literally just kicks him off like this platform they're hovering on. And I'm like, "Well, that was a really interesting callback." But before Garland died, he basically planted a seed of doubt into Kuja's head by saying, "Well, you're going to die too. You're not immortal. You're going to expire." And this causes Kuja to freak. And he basically turns into, he goes into a trance. Like, everyone can go into a trance, but he goes into a trance and he takes off to the Ifla tree. I forget what it's called, that mist tree thing. And that's where the final battle takes place after you go through this weird realm of memories, which was kind of twisted and weird and full of weird things. And it says more cryptic stuff about souls and Terra and Gaia. But the long and the short of it is, you go up against Kuja, you beat him. That was a pain in the ass because he's just, like, equipped for days with all sorts of spells. And then, when it seems like, okay, well, that's all said and done, that's great, the game goes full Persona and puts you against this, like, entity who says, "Mankind desires destruction and oblivion, and I will take everything back to zero because I will destroy the crystal," and the crystal being, like, the source of all life, and Kuja wanted to destroy it because his whole philosophy was, well, why should everyone live if I can't? Which is, okay, that's one
pretty
hell of
selfish.
A tantrum. it's a tantrum, but you know what? I can kind of understand that. It's a stupid reason, but it's a reason. I don't know why this. I forget what the other guy's name was, Necron or something of that sort, where he just comes out of nowhere and says, "I will kill you all." And we said, "No, we won't. We want to live because we're JRPG heroes." So we killed him. And he's like, "I am eternal." And yeah, that was the end of the game. And I don't know where the hell that last bit came from, but maybe that was supposed to be a callback to Final Fantasy IV, where suddenly Zeromus is the bad guy out of nowhere. But this just was weird.
So leading up to the final battle in the final dungeon, you get a really cool airship battle.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. That was when when you're going into the area, he summons, or whoever is behind it, summons like just dozens of these silver dragon things that Kuja was riding on, which is a really intimidating thing to do because you fight one of them earlier in the game, and they're pretty difficult. They're not easy to go down. I mean, like, one of them is, like, Kuja's companion through the whole game. So to see, like, thousands of them fly at you is like, oh, okay, we have a problem here.
Yep. And you get a really cool boss battle with a white dragon.
Yeah, you get I think it was called the Nova Dragon. That was a pretty neat-looking thing. I noticed it was also, it kind of had a headpiece very similar to Panzer Dragoon's dragons. I thought that was a nice touch.
For some reason, I thought the famous line, "No cloud, no squall shall hinder us," appeared in this battle, but I guess it was during the play?
Is it the play, the very end of the game? Mm-hmm. I think I looked at Legends of Localization about that, and that was added by the translator, so that was kind of a cute little callback.
Yeah, it was a pretty good callback, and
yeah,
everybody immediately recognized it. But I remember there being some kind of callback to like Final Fantasy VII or VIII during the airship battle.
It really reminded me more of 4, because with the Giant of Babel, who kind of stomps through the underground, and the dwarves, and all the people from the airship, all the people, like all your allies, basically, come together and defeat it, or stall it while you go in.
Mm-hmm. And it's called Memoria. Duh.
Memoria, okay.
The first time you see Memoria, really cool kind of backdrop.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking up at it and going, "Wow, what? That's an amazing map painting right there."
No, it was really neat. I really enjoyed that last dungeon. I thought the music was really good. I really, really like how when you get towards the crystal where Kuja is, there's like kind of the Final Fantasy crystal theme, but in a minor tone. kind of a perversion, twisted version of it. That was a really interesting touch.
The dungeon itself is basically a boss run.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I came up against the four fiends. And remember when I said, oh, why can't I fight the four fiends? Well, I'm regretting that now.
They're pretty tough bosses, aren't they?
They're tough bosses. You fight all four of them again. Well, before you only fought the Lich, but now you fight... I can never remember the name of the Lich,
Tiamat, and one other.
Yeah, yeah. Lich comes back. Tiamat, Marlis, I think her name was, the snake lady.
Mm-hmm. And I remember the Kraken being pretty tough, actually.
The Kraken was a jerk, because he basically inks your party, and you can't connect.
Yeah, so you can't actually hit the Kraken.
And I can't remember if he has a counter to magic. He might have. I know a lot of them had counters, which are just like, wow, that's really dirty, buddy.
Yeah, having auto-reflect in Memoria could be really useful.
That was probably would have been a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I had auto, not auto-reflect, but I did have auto-regen.
Mm-hmm.
So having both would have been, that would have made my life a lot easier.
Remind me who your party was.
I had Zidane, Garnet, Vivi, and Freya.
And Freya, okay. And what was your main strategy?
I've always been like, let's see, I usually had Vivi use Bio, because Bio's always been like a good standby spell for Final Fantasy. I would have Garnet do a couple of summons, but not too much, because she was the healer slash buffer, although Vivi did some buffing as well. Zidane just hit things, and usually Freya, she would use like one of her dragon powers. Like, she did, I think I would use her regen spell a lot before I finally put auto regen on my party. Failing that, she would usually just jump.
Hmm. And so, when I originally played this game, and I might have told you this, when I made it all the way to Memoria, but I could not beat the one of the four fiends. It was either Kraken or Lich. I could not beat. Like, they just beat me. And it became painfully apparent that I was underleveled.
Right.
And rather than level up, I ended up putting the game aside.
Mm.
And it took me a couple more years before I finally went back and beat it.
You were like right there too. Although
except I didn't play from that point. I started over.
Oh, that would have been, you know what? I probably would have done the same thing. I'm sure I would have done the same thing, because if you're underleveled at that point, you say to yourself, I went wrong somewhere. I should start again.
Pretty much. And I think it's actually really easy to be underleveled at that point if you are just playing through the game normally, because there's a pretty substantial difficulty spike when you're fighting those guardians. Yeah,
yeah. Because first of all, there's a real gauntlet going on. There's several bosses to do at once, and only sometimes do you get a chance to go back and save and heal up. But yeah, I actually did quite a bit of leveling up before going up against the final run, and that's easy enough with the new game, because I can just fast forward through everything. But yeah, it's not easy towards the end, and up until that point, I really wasn't having a huge problem with anyone.
Yeah, if you didn't bring the right number of items with you, you definitely want to stock up and everything heading into this final battle. Compared to, it's certainly a lot more involved than say the final dungeon in Final Fantasy VII, the crater.
Yeah, the crater's pretty straightforward.
And maybe not as involved as Final Fantasy VIII's Final Dungeon, where you have to get all of your abilities back. But there's not really any puzzles. You're just kind of running through and trying to survive.
Yeah, it's very much a gauntlet of survival.
Battle of attrition.
Yes. Yeah.
While also kind of telling a story, because the whole point is that you're seeing the memories of various people in Gaia and all that.
Yeah. I mean, this is something we'll probably go over in our wrap-up for Final Fantasy IX, but a lot of the story just didn't make a lot of sense, and I feel like that was a little bit out of place towards with this game, which is a very cute, straightforward game that wants to be like Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy I, which is a very good versus evil struggle, and it just feels like it loses the thread towards the last third.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, what the hell is with that Persona guy? It's just all a little bit strange, but we'll go more into that, I think, with our wrap-up.
So in terms of the final battle with Kuja, what did you think about that?
A little bit low key for a Final Fantasy battle. I'm so used to like bosses coming down with like six angel wings and, you know, four heads or whatever. And Kuja was just, he went Super Saiyan 4 and he had some sort of weird circle behind him. And that looked like an Ouroboros, frankly, now that I think about it. And I said, oh, okay. So yeah, that was, he used Flare Star and that was a pain in the ass. But no, it was an okay battle. At least it had his theme. I like his theme, so.
So you fight a dragon first.
Yeah, you fight the Nova Dragon first.
You fight a dragon, then you fight Kuja, and then you fight Necron. So technically speaking, there are like three different boss forms.
Yep.
Compared to Ultimecia, who is Ultimecia, and then second form, third form, and then whatever the heck time compression Ultimecia.
Yeah.
Extreme Ultimecia, where you're... So that's four forms right there.
Yeah, and when you think back to Final Fantasy VI, you had that tier of bosses, which I thought was incredibly cool, but if you don't have a bunch of characters who are leveled up properly, you're screwed.
Yeah, so. It feels like it harkens back to Final Fantasy IV even, because... Don't you have a fairly straightforward final battle, and then you have to fight Zeramis, and then you're done?
Final Fantasy IV, I think Golbez and Fusoya soften up Zeramis, and then you go in. But on the path to Zeramis is pretty brutal, especially towards the last few floors, where every random encounter is a boss.
Mm-hmm.
And... I didn't find out till many years later you can use Edge and use Smoke to get out of there, but otherwise you can't run away from most of those battles. And we're talking about like two Red Dragons at once or two Behemoths at once.
Pretty brutal. I mean, in Final Fantasy IX, you're fighting all of the usuals in Memoria. You're fighting the Iron Giant. And
I was really happy to see the Iron Giant come back.
Iron Giant's back, Behemoths are there.
Oh,
yeah,
one thing we forgot to mention was Kuja had another boss with him. He called him Death Gauze or something. It was obviously a mistranslation of Death Gaze, but yeah. I was like, oh, hey, you're from Final Fantasy VI. How's it going?
He actually had him with him? Oh, right.
He summoned him or something. And
you had to fight him.
Yeah.
That's one of the forms, essentially, that you have to fight. So it's like a three-part battle, right?
Yeah. That's right, the dragon, Death Gaze, and dude.
So I remember being kind of let down by that final battle.
It was, like I said, it was very subdued, wasn't it? Like, compared to what you usually get. I was a little surprised.
It was a bit anticlimactic, I would say, yeah.
And
But I think just by comparison of what we were used to.
Exactly.
At that point, where it's, oh yeah, the final battle is this where they just go all out with the insanity of all of the different forms. Even though, like, Sephiroth, that was essentially a three-part battle because you had to fight Genova.
Yeah.
And then you had to fight giant Sephiroth. Well, that was a relatively easy battle. But One-Winged Angel Sephiroth was a mega event all by itself.
Yeah, that was incredible for the time. I'm not a big fan of One-Winged Angel now, and God knows I hate watching that summon, the supernova summon, over and over again.
I think it's still pretty rad.
It was rad the first time, but then he started doing it again and again. I'm like, Sephiroth, stop.
He only ever got one off against me.
Okay, well, I'm bad.
And as long as I had a Mega Elixir with me, I was fine.
Yeah, you always gotta have those Mega Elixirs.
Because otherwise you're gonna be like a confused frog that's down to no life whatsoever.
Yeah, that was Kefka's favorite trick in Final Fantasy VI, was he'd cast Fallen One as his very first move every single time. And if you're stricken with something that saps your HP, you could be in a lot of trouble if you don't have a Mega Elixir.
So, the arrival of Necron.
Mm-hmm.
I hated that the first time I played it.
I bet.
I have a little more perspective now.
Okay.
They are clearly trying to call back to Chaos in the original Final Fantasy.
Oh, okay. The time loop and everything? But I don't
just see the whole idea of you beat the final boss, but Chaos is always out there.
Right.
And Chaos is going to come out and you're going to have to fight Chaos now, because the whole point of Final Fantasy is life versus death.
Right.
and especially Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9. That was a huge theme, especially in 7 and 9.
Yeah, 9 is really big on life versus death, especially towards the end.
And so it sort of makes sense in that that is a, it's just a callback. The battle itself is just a callback to the original Final Fantasy.
Okay, it makes a little more sense in that perspective, but as taken as an individual event, it doesn't, it still seems really weirdly out of place. I was
It's just like,
that?
What? What's going on? What? Who are you?
You look weird.
Way to come out of nowhere, dude.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess, here's the thing about Final Fantasy IX, it's such a story about, like, finding purpose in life, and that's great, but then to have someone come at the last second and say, you know, oh, it's, you all crave nothingness, and they have to stand there and say, no, we love each other, we're friends. It's just so corny and so unnecessary.
Sure. Very anime.
Very, very anime. It didn't really need to be there.
But at the same time, if you say that everybody's searching for the purpose in life, then Necron, you could say, represents the darkness in all of our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that, no, just because they've found their purpose or they're feeling better about themselves doesn't mean that everything is fixed. The darkness is always out there.
Right. And I figure it's also a callback to Final Fantasy VI again, where Kefka, at the very end of the game, he's basically destroyed the world and he just wants to, like, keep destroying it and until it's nothing. And his whole thing is, well, what's the point? Why do you keep on living? Why do you keep on fighting? And the party's members stand there and they tell him specifically. So you had a little bit of that going on, too, in 9.
I always loved the big moment in any RPG, especially a JRPG, where all of the characters would stand out and talk about why they were fighting.
Yeah.
So, they did that a lot in Fire Emblem as well. You would always...
I call it the anime love-in.
I love it. Come on.
It's
so cheesy.
Very cheesy, but heartwarming.
Very cheesy, but heartwarming. But Necron goes down, and you... tell us what happens next.
Basically, Zidane goes back for Kuja, because he senses Kuja's still alive somewhere within the tree. And everyone's saying, you're crazy, why would you do that? And Zidane says, well, if I was in his shoes, I might have gone down the same path, like, in terms of trying to kill everyone. So... He finds Kuja in the tree, and there's this really great Matrix moment where he's falling, and he rushes past Kuja, and they just kind of stop and look at each other for a second, and then of course he falls the rest of the way. So they sit there and they talk a little bit, and I don't know if Kuja died or not. I kind of got the impression he might have, but because basically the tree closes in on them. And a year passes, and everyone's getting together again in Alexandria to see the canary thing, the canary play. And Garnet is queen. Beatrix looked like she was about to retire, but she changed her mind at the last minute. Vivi had children. I don't know what the hell that was about. He just butted or something. But the
That's what you meant when you were like, Vivi sprouted.
That's right, in Slack. I just wrote out of nowhere, did Vivi sprout like a plant? So that must have been interesting out of context.
Vivi is doing what robots do, I guess.
Making robots.
The singularity is near when robots start to create new robots and that are self-improving. That's the singularity. And they will continue to self-improve into infinity. Well, that's what we're seeing with Vivi.
Oh, good luck, everyone.
Singularity is near. Eat your heart out, Ray Kurzweil.
But, they do the play, and I thought they kind of infer that Zidane is dead, but surprise, he's not dead. He's playing the lead in the play, and he takes off his cloak, and he hugs Garnet, and that was kind of sweet.
Mm.
And it was a nice, heartwarming ending. I don't know how he survived. I think Garnet asked him the very same question, and he said, I had no choice except to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So he's back, and everyone's mostly happy. I did notice, side note, that Beatrix's Save the Queen is actually the same one Celeste uses in Final Fantasy VI Advance, so there's that link established, I suppose.
And she ends up with Steiner.
She does. It's kind of cute. She ends up with
They lit the sword together, and it's very cute.
I thought that was a nice little touch, especially like since the really it's the one of the last defining moments in the game, and they get it.
Zidane came coming out of nowhere, being like, "Ta-da, survived!" Reminds me of the end of Final Fantasy X-2, where just Tidus just randomly shows up, and everybody's on the beach, and he runs out to Yuna.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, well, okay, I guess you weren't imaginary after all. There you are.
I'm actually, like, even though it was very cute and sweet, I'm a little disappointed they just didn't kind of kill him off. I know they wouldn't because Final Fantasy characters, or the heroes just don't die.
Heroes never die. Sorry.
It takes a lot of guts to kill your hero. Thinking on it, the only RPG I can think of off the top of my head is Terranigma. That was a really sad ending.
They should have left him dead.
What's that?
His purpose was fulfilled. He should have stayed dead.
I don't know. Just,
What do you think, people? Do you think that Zidane should have stayed dead? Tell us in the comments, and we'll discuss this next week.
It'd be kind of sad for Garnet, because, well, she was obviously missing him a lot. But life goes on. That was the whole theme of the game.
Yeah. I like the song Melodies of Life, by the way.
That's a nice song. It's a really nice song, and I like it on the overworld as well.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And this was obviously the point where Final Fantasy always had to have a song.
Always had to have that song. And to be honest, it's one of the better ones.
For sure.
Not that I don't like Eyes on Me, but...
I think Melodies of Life holds up much better than Eyes on Me.
Yeah, and speaking of sad endings, Final Fantasy VIII kind of had a sad ending, with Laguna at least, but...
Final Fantasy VIII definitely had a bittersweet ending because there was a time loop established.
Mm-hmm.
Where you see Ultimecia beam back to the past and pass on her sorcery powers to Edea.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that, oh, okay, well, this is all going to happen again. It's a stable time loop and everything, but
yeah,
it has a really cute ending with the video.
Yeah, the video was
in
funny.
The garden.
I liked the video.
And Zell stuffing his face full of hot dogs and such.
Doesn't he choke or something? And
yeah, no, he's like totally choking. He's going to die.
Imagine saving the world and you die because you choked on a hot dog.
That's a very Zell thing to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And the very final scene, of course, is the Rinoa and Squall kissing under the moonlight. Under the light of a demon moon.
But under the demon moon. How appropriate.
I like that it ended. I like that it brought things full circle with the play again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I liked that.
That was a cute way for Zidane to make his comeback and everything. So
yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations, Nadia. You've officially wrapped up Final Fantasy IX.
Woo, I can check it off my bucket list. I'm done.
Initial thoughts before we move on?
Like I said, we'll go into this more next week, I suppose. But it was definitely one of the better... Final Fantasy by a long shot.
I think the end's pretty messy, to be honest.
The end is very messy, and that's something I'll get into next week. I really feel like it slips in the last third of the game, but overall, it's just a very solid, cute package, and I'm glad I played it finally.
People are going to think I'm totally insane for saying this, but in some ways, I think Final Fantasy VIII is tighter.
Oh, you're going to get destroyed.
Just in the sense of that plot is extremely messy, but you, right around the midpoint, you realize that, okay, here's, maybe not. Maybe it's not as, maybe it's a lot messier than Final Fantasy IX, but I do remember really enjoying the kind of the finale with the, it has a lot of really great individual moments.
Mm-hmm. Which, 9 or 8?
9 or 8. 8 does. 8 has a lot of really great individual moments with the, there's the Lunar Cry and going into Esther for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the final time compression loop and the final battle in Ultimecia's castle. I definitely think Final Fantasy VIII has a much better final battle as a whole.
Probably, yeah. I feel like the last bit of Final Fantasy IX was redeemed a bit by the Memoriam place. Mm-hmm. I just think that was a really neat area. But yeah, we'll get into that next week.
I think IX does have a stronger overall story.
Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely.
But it's very beholden to its references and everything.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree with that.
And if I had to go back and play one of them, I'd probably play 8. But
I should give 8 another try, because I did get quite a bit into it, but I did not finish it. I just got fed up with it.
2018 Final Fantasy 8 report.
Yay!
All right, Nadia, as usual, we will read off a few letters from our readers. Rider Kicker says, not much for the Blood God this week, except I just got Breath of the Wild. Wow, there you go. Yay. Very great walking simulator, but must finish Odyssey. One more thing, Monster Hunter demo released today, and I'm being extremely noob. Managed to survive 2 hunting trips with Bob Mackie. Wow, Rider Kicker and Bob Mackie, apparently friends.
Oh, that's nice.
I can see why it's quite fun, though. It's bizarre you swing an axe with the R2 trigger. Satellite of Love says, Saga Frontier was a supremely Kawazu mess. My lord, that music. And includes some music. And there's some love for Saga Frontier's Tau music. And, of course, that wonderful watercolor art style of Saga Frontier 2.
It's pretty gorgeous.
Kuninino says, regarding Nier's combat, I think its simplicity complements a 10-hour of playthrough. Unfortunately, since Automata is in the 30 hours range and 2/3 of it consists of repeating content, the simplicity becomes a detriment. By the time you've button-mashed your way out of yet another repeated boss, trust me, Cat, you'll long for something different. Nier is no Neo when it comes to combat, unfortunately. It's barely above the first Devil May Cry. However, combat isn't the point of Nier. Take into account the whole experience, and it's unlike anything else out there right now. I think Neo and Nier are bad comparison.
This is an interesting comparison. The thing I know most about Neo is that it's a lot like the Souls games, if I'm not mistaken. And also, there's this cutscene I love where this guy pulls out a cat and checks his eyes to see the time. And he just has it in his vest, and he's like, dawn is breaking, and he puts the cat back in his vest. It's like, just totally straight-faced. It's amazing.
Neo is, I mean, Dark Souls meets Team Ninja.
Oh boy, so that's if you want to die twice?
It's meant to be complicated in that regard. And, I mean, and Devil May Cry is a straight action game. Mm-hmm. Nier is more of a meditation.
Yeah.
With action elements. I've also been playing more of that. I'm at the point where, let's see what just happened. I had to do a really annoying fetch quest in that one.
Gave up there?
No, I didn't give up. I did the fetch quest, but I actually continually get lost because the pathing on the map isn't super great.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time figuring, okay, where am I supposed to go? Oh, I have to go into a building and then go up here and then climb this. And like, do you see what I mean? So I was having a hard time doing some of the navigational stuff. But
yeah, that's one thing I actually adore about Breath of the Wild is it maps out its topography so well.
Yeah, yeah. Xenoblade Chronicles 2 also has a bit of a problem with overly complicated maps.
Yeah,
where I'm trying to be like, okay, well, I'm heading toward this marker, but there's something in my way. God damn it. Yeah. Where's the alternate path?
Exactly. Like I said, with the Zelda, the topography is there, so you know exactly how high something is. Xenoblade Chronicles is like, here's a shade of gray, and here's another shade of gray. Figure it out for yourself.
All right. And, of course, as always, Acts of Blood God, US Gamer Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are sold. Make sure to subscribe to us on all of the social medias. USGamerNet, _CapOp for me, at Nadia Oxford, is for Nadia Oxford.
The one game we really, really should talk about at some point is Thousand Year Door, because that is just an excellent game.
Thousand Year Door, I mean...
You didn't like
that's, it? It's stretching a... Oh, no, that's a Paper Mario game, though.
It's a Paper Mario game,
and Paper Mario games are... those aren't really RPGs. They're more platformers, right?
No, this one was really more of an RPG. Lately, it's been more platformy, but no, this was a very RPG-ish RPG.
Okay.
And it was just funny. It had fantastic soundtrack. I mean, one of the first things you see when you walk into town is the outline, like a body chalk outline of a toad, and you see a mob hit with the Piantas, like from Super Mario Sunshine, which I've never done anything useful in the series, except be mob bosses in Thousand Year Door.
Everybody says Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is easily the best out of the entire series, and that is hilarious. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I actually really wanted to come on to the Switch somehow. If they do a remake, if they do a re-release, I don't care. I am playing it.
Man, I am so of two minds about the whole Switch thing in that, on the one hand, it is awesome to get games like Bayonetta on there because I'm like, yes. Oh, sweet. I can replay these games in portable. And it looks great. And this is just a perfect fit for the Switch. And I can sit on my chair next to my window with a cup of tea, listening with my headphones on, playing this game. This is phenomenal. And if I want, I can play it on my TV. But there's another part of me going, oh my God, is the Switch just going to be re-releases for unto the ending of time? Because I think that's what's going to happen. Next year, it's going to be all freaking re-releases.
I guess we'll have to see because, this year had a lot of original titles, but of course, most of those came from Nintendo. But that same old, same old.
It's all going to be ports next year.
Ports for days.
So Bayonetta 3 being announced is pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was a nice little announcement.
Nice reveal. I really hope that Nintendo has something up its sleeve for next year because it really sure does feel like they shot all of their bullets this year.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Smash Brothers.
Oh, for sure.
But, it might just be a port of Smash 4. Anyway, I digress. We'll talk about that more next year.
Yeah.
This is the second to last Axe of the Blood God of the Year. Next week, we'll be back to do a wrap-up of the year. We will name our top five RPGs, including Axe of the Blood God's favorite RPG of 2017. And we'll also wrap up our Final Fantasy IX report. But until then, for Bob, Nadia, and myself, thanks for listening. And until next time, happy adventuring.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.